Stay tuned for a Juno Afternoon. We'll get an update on library activities. We'll get the scoop on the upcoming Lemon Creek cleanup event. Hiram Henry will be here to highlight running in Juno, and we'll learn about the Rotaract fundraiser Christmas in July. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more. That's on a Juno Afternoon. Taking a look at the weather, it will be cloudy through Saturday with daytime highs in the upper 50s. This evening, chance of precipitation is 60%, primarily before 7 o'clock. Tomorrow, chance of precip is also 60%, with showers likely between 1 and 4. And looking to tomorrow night, chance of precipitation between 10 p.m. and 1. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A number of Native American advocacy groups are seeking testimonies from families whose relatives went missing while attending boarding schools across the country. As Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports, they're looking for information on people who attended the schools from the late 1800s through the 1980s.
Christine Dindisi McCleave is the director for the Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition. She says many children never returned from boarding schools, either because they died of disease or abuse there, or ran away. Once collected, the stories will be submitted to the United Nations. McCleave says it's time the world heard them.
Basically, we're asking people to share the call for testimony with their tribal communities and on social media, to talk with their relatives and ask if anyone in their family went missing at boarding schools, and then to contact us with their testimony.
But McCleave warns that as healing as it is to share such stories, it can also re-traumatize people.
It is a very sensitive subject, and so we do encourage people to make sure that if they're going to bring these testimonies and stories to the surface, that they have that support for emotional, mental, spiritual well-being.
If you have a story of a missing boarding school student to share, go to boardingschoolhealing.org. For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards in Laramie.
The fifth and final year of work has begun on Passage of Wind and Water, a privately funded public art project in Rapid City, South Dakota. As Jim Kent reports, the large sculpture has brought together people of diverse cultures, including Native American tribes, while serving as a gathering place for artists and musicians.
Sitting near Rapid City's Main Street Square on an oppressively hot summer day, sculptor Masayuki Nagase says it's hard to believe he first began work on the Passage of Wind and Water art project in 2013.
It's a long way to go in 5 years, but now, you know, I feel like, oh, it's just in a flash, you know.
Working with 21 immense granite stones that border what's become the central gathering place for members of the community, the internationally known sculptor has created abstract images of the natural, geological, and cultural histories of the Badlands and the Black Hills. Key among them has been the Native American story.
Through these years, I have been acquainted with Native people, and I read a lot about Native culture, and naturally I had a lot of inspiration.
Primary among those points of inspiration are images of the buffalo and of the horse. Nagase says he continues to visit the Pine Ridge Reservation in order to fuel his imagination. The Passage of Wind and Water sculpture project has already been the catalyst for many community art projects over the course of its creation, including Native American art and music gatherings. Masayuki Nagase hopes members of the Native community will continue to do great things alongside his 21 sculpted granite stones. I'm Jim Kent.
A group of U.S. Democratic senators and environmental coalitions are calling on the Trump administration to protect national monuments. The Interior Department is reviewing a number of monuments across the country, including some sacred to Native Americans. New Mexico Senator Martin Heinrich is leading a press conference with environmental groups today at the U.S. Capitol as the public comment period closes at midnight. In Washington on Wednesday, the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs is set to examine Indian education, tribal funding, and economic development. Senators will consider three bills, including updating the Johnson O'Malley Supplemental Indian Education Program. Tribal leaders, educators, and federal officials are scheduled to testify. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista. And by Humboldt State University, we know what it means to be rooted in community. You can get your Master's of Social Work and amplify your voice without having to leave it. The part-time online program accepts applications between August 1st and 31st. More at humboldt.edu/social work.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling, this afternoon's volunteer host, and with me is Jeff Brown, the producer of the program. Our first guests today are Andy Hirsch, she is head of electronic services and community outreach for Juneau Public Libraries, and Beth Weigel, the program coordinator also for Juneau Public Libraries. What's up at the library? There's never a time that nothing's happening at the library. I stop by there fairly frequently, both at the Valley and the downtown branches, and they're always busy.
That's right.
Yeah, so I think the question of, are libraries still relevant?
Are answered
for me
relevant.
Every time I walk in there. All kinds of people using electronic services, and of course, kids always during the summertime. So let's talk about what's up with kids and for kids this summer.
Yeah, so we're deep into the heart of summer reading program, and we've got lots of ongoing things. So our story times and toddler times, we add in a creative time with those, and there's still the regular times each week at each respective library. And then we add some special programs throughout the summer as well that sort of match up with our theme for the summer, which is Build a Better World. So in July, we do a Science Friday every Friday at the library.
And is that the downtown site then?
It generally moves around, but most of them are at the Valley Library this year. So like last week, we had an architect come in, and we talked all about architecture and how building green helps the world, you know, be a better place to live in, and your home is a better place to live in. And this coming week, we have someone from the National Weather Service, Rick Fritsch, coming to talk about the science of weather from space. And this is also part of our NASA at the Library grant that we received. So we're delving into a lot of space science at the library as we think about different technologies that NASA helps launch, for example, satellites, and how that helps us to learn about the weather here on Earth. And then also we'll think a little bit about weather in other places, like on Mars and the absence of weather on the Moon. And we have this great kit that they gave us through the grant, and it includes having a green screen and a tablet, and we can put those kids that come up on the Moon, and they can give us some weather reports from the Moon.
Some virtual reality, perhaps.
Yeah, it's a little bit like that. So, of course, you know how green screen technology works. You stand in front of the green screen, and then through the magic,
you jump off the tallest building in the world, and you're okay.
Yeah, through the magic of the technology, it looks like you're somewhere else to everybody else.
What is the age group you are inviting for the Friday science activities?
We invite 7 to 12-year-olds. It really works well for that age group, but we often get youngers who come with siblings and parents who stay, and lots of people enjoy it. And, of course, if a younger gets a little fidgety, then they can just move right over into the children's area and hang out and play Legos or whatever until the rest of Science Friday is over for their older sibling or something like that. We have a couple other ones that will be the rest of the summer as well. We have on the 21st, it's all about ghost fishing and marine debris. The Douglas Indian Association, along with Alaska Department of Fish and Game and NOAA, did a cleanup recently of some marine debris. People might have heard about the human foot that they brought in with their debris. But they're going to talk a little bit about what that means, and then we'll have some activities around that as well out in our lawn and whatnot. And then the last one for the July series will be called Out to Sea. It's all about maritime vessels and charts and knots, and we're going to partner up with the Marine Exchange folks who are building this new building right by the bridge, and they track a lot of vessels. And we're going to also go have that one at the APK, at the state museum and do some science on the sphere and look at how vessels are moving all over the world. So,
what time of day does Science on Fridays happen?
It happens from 1 to 3.
And do people need to pre-register for that? It sounds like it could be pretty popular.
Yeah, they're pretty popular. Last week, I think we had 40 or so kids there. And we don't require any pre-registration.
And it's free.
Yeah, it's free. We do like to start at 1 o'clock, so people trickle in. They might miss a little bit in the beginning, but otherwise, you know, anybody can come to that at 1 o'clock on Friday. This week is, again, the science of weather from space.
And I assume the programs are listed online so parents can see what the upcoming programs are then.
Yep, we have our calendar. You can get a printed one at the library, or you can download that off of our website. We post everything on our Facebook page as well.
And that's juno.org/libraries?
Yep, that's our website, and our Facebook, I think, is facebook.com/library/events.
Good. Andy, what else is up this summer?
Well, we have some pretty great stuff for teens, too. So Science Friday is aimed more, like Beth said, for ages 7 to 12. And so we have a series on Wednesdays that is aimed more for teenagers. Teens and tweens, mostly people entering the 6th to 8th grade. Outliers a little bit younger, a little bit older, are of course welcome. So this last one we did was hula hoops. And the next one we're doing is edible art. So we are going to get really creative. We're going to create art also with things that you can eat. upcoming ones, and so that is on tomorrow, July 12th, at the Valley Library. They start at 2 o'clock, and then it's every Wednesday for the rest of the month. So the week after that, July 19th, we're going to do juggling and poi. So we're going to build our own poi. And
explain
juggle.
Poi.
Okay, so poi
I think I know what poi is, but trying to picture juggling it sounds
right. Juggling
real...
and poi, two different activities.
Okay,
it sounded juggling messy. The balls, and then poi is generally like a weighted thing on the end of a rope or a stick or things like that, and then you swing them around, and you can make beautiful patterns, and it's very artistic, and I hit my head a lot. I'm not very good at it, but other people like are beautiful. You can, once you get really advanced, they have things like fire poi where you can set the ends on fire. They have lighted poi, and so it makes beautiful geometric designs in the air. And so it's really cool. It's very enjoyable. So we are going to be building poi and juggling, so you can learn the basics of how to juggle. You can learn the basics of poi. And then the week after that, July 26th, we are going to be building hope flags. We're going to be designing and creating.
Did you say hope?
Hope flag.
What is a hope flag?
We have a really great person who's coming in and helping us with all these. Her name's Corey Stennett. And so we are not completely sure what that means. But I think, you know, with our theme, Build a Better World, I'm sure it has to do with how we're hopeful and, you know, creating a better world.
And expressing that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So for the teens and tweens, it's Wednesdays at 2.
At the Valley Library.
Always at the Valley Library. And we were chatting a little bit before we went on the air about kind of a job experience-oriented series of chats.
Yeah.
Also for teenagers.
Right. And actually, you know, kind of ages 10 and up. So if you... and this is us, we're partnering with the U.S. Coast Guard Work Life Office. And so the idea is to introduce people, particularly kids and teens, into ideas of jobs that they might want in the future and kind of what skills should they be keeping their eye on to develop in order to get into this type of work. And so these are also on Fridays. They're in the evenings. The next one is July 21st. And we are going to be chatting with Juno first responders. So first responders, people who respond to accidents. And we have a lot of different types of first responders. So you have police and fire. We also have like mountain rescue. We have marine first responders. And so these are really highly skilled people who respond to emergencies and accidents. And so what kind of skills do you need as a kid, and what should you be working on developing? What do those jobs really entail? Is that something that you want, that you should go for, or not? And so these are, it's basically a series that kind of, you get to talk to people, you get to like peek into what their jobs entail and ask them a lot of questions and see if it's something that you might want to do.
And you said Friday evening, what time of day?
Right, so Friday at 5:30 p.m. And the next one is July 21st.
And so, which branch?
The Valley
at
Library.
The Valley Library. So lots for kids happening. How does that shift once we reach fall? School starts in just about a month.
Right. Well, we do have a couple other things that would be maybe of interest to adults this month. And maybe, Andy, you want to talk a little bit about game day. And then also tomorrow, we're inviting people to come down to the downtown library at noon or anywhere from noon to 2 or 3 or so. And we'll have a beautiful book display of Thoreau, Henry David Thoreau, because it's his 200th birthday tomorrow. So we might even have a little cake and just celebrate Thoreau, pick out a few books, remind yourself what, you know, on civil disobedience was and walking and Walden and all those great.
I remember reading a listing of the materials he used to build the little cabin at Walden Pond in Massachusetts, which was not entirely remote. It was near a village, but he spent about $28, and he had a full listing of the nails, et cetera, that he used to build that cabin.
Yeah.
So cake, or possibly cake.
I think we're going to have some cake and then a little giveaway of some free books and just a book display with a lot of different books, so you can check it out.
Henry David Thoreau, 200 tomorrow. Mm-hmm. What else is up, Andy?
Well, we're also doing a game day at the library, and that's going to be Saturday, July 22nd at the Valley. It runs from 11 to 5, and we partner with Platypus Gaming, which is a local nonprofit, and they bring hundreds of games for people of all ages. So
hundreds?
Hundreds.
Wow.
You think I'm joking, and I'm not. Hundreds. So card games, board games, dice games, games that two people can play, games that 10 people can play.
Games that cover the floor.
Come on, is Twister on the list?
Probably not. Generally things you haven't heard of. But, you know, some of these new games that have been coming out in the last 10 or 15 years, less so on the classics.
Kind of like cooperative games. Like you have to do a lot of things and learn, take a lot of steps to get to like some levels.
Strategy. Tactics.
So that is on the 23rd. Is that
Saturday, July 22nd.
Okay, so that's a week from this Saturday.
Right.
And did you say noon to 5?
It is going to be 11 to 5. Show up anytime.
6 hours.
Well, you don't have
anytime,
to stay the whole time.
But anytime within that. You can go to the Valley Library and find, according to Andy,
hundreds of games.
Yeah.
And one of the exciting things about this, too, is that we're developing our partnership with the Platypus folks, and we're going to start circulating some of these games because some of them are a little more complex and people, you know, just start to get the hang of it at game day and then they want to, like, get into it a little more.
So they're really expensive.
Yeah.
You could check
out
a game then from the library.
We're working on it. That's going to be available sometime in the next month or two.
Now, is Platypus a national organization? It's a local
nonprofit started by a game enthusiast, a couple game enthusiasts in town. And I think he just was collecting so many games. He's like, oh, I should share. And so I think they do a convention every year and hundreds of people show up and play games. And so throughout the year, they partner with the library and we do 3, 4, 5 different game days. You know, just on Saturday, he'll bring 100-150 different games and
with the weather we've been having, this is like a perfect thing.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So Beth, I know the library has been successful in gaining a number of grants, and one of them is a fairly large NEA grant. Describe that and what we'll be launching with that support in the fall.
Right. Well, in about a month ago or so, we made a big announcement that we received a NEA Big Read grant, which is from the National Endowment for the Arts, and it's administered through Arts Midwest. And so we received $15,000, and that means that we're going to we're partnering also with the University of Alaska Southeast with their One Campus, One Book project, and so we're all going to read the same book in our community and at the university, and it's Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel. And we're going to do this basically over the course of 6 weeks between September 15th and October 30th will be the programming, and it'll include things like a preparedness fair that the city puts on, and a lot of book talks, of course. The symphony is going to be doing a selection of music that kind of is hopeful, because this is a dystopian sort of novel. It's like a end of civilization,
but not
apocalyptic,
quite.
But not quite, right? And so
incredibly
it's all about
creative premise.
Right, all about how after, you know, a pandemic sweeps through and sort of ends civilization as we know it, how 20 years later things are starting to be rebuilt and people are creating connections again and finding hope through art like Shakespeare,
like music.
And music. There's a traveling symphony and a traveling troupe of actors, so we'll do some reading of Shakespeare again.
And there is no technology.
Right, there's no technology. Those are the things that have become really sort of the oddities in the museum of civilization, the things that we take for granted now that we use every day. They've become these sort of relics that people kind of are curious about. You know, what was this for? You know, particularly the younger people, right? They're like, what was that for? And other people have become very nostalgic around. So.
And how was Station 11 chosen?
We had a little group of people that got together, which included, of course, the University of Alaska Southeast, Jonas Lamb, and the State Library also helped us a little bit in deciding. And we just talked about, there's a list on the NEA website. So when we knew we were going to apply for the grant, we looked at the different books that are listed there and talked about, about three or four of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of all went off and thought about those three or four and what kind of programming would be interesting and engaging, and we all came back to Station 11 just because it is our first attempt at doing a community read. We wanted something that would be really engaging and interesting for the community.
And does the money help purchase books for distribution?
That's right. Mm-hmm. So in addition to that, it'll help pay for the different programming that we'll be doing. October is also Alaskan Authors Month, so we'll bring some authors in collaboration through 49 Writers here that are writing towards that similar theme, that they're not necessarily, you know, it's not Emily St. John Mandel because we couldn't afford her, but even with the grant money. But yes, definitely we'll have some interesting authors that can speak to the themes. I know there's going to be a couple Evening at Egan's, one that has to do with zombies that Saul Neely is going to be doing. And so there's just going to be, I mean, just 6 weeks of nonstop fun and programming around this book. I think everybody will really enjoy it.
Lots coming up. Very exciting. We're talking with Andy Hirsch and Beth Weigel from Juneau Public Libraries. Check them out and what's happening at our various library sites around Juneau. There's lots happening at your local public library. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 11th of July, 2017. It's the birthday of the artist best known for a painting of his mother, James Abbott McNeil Whistler, born in Lowell, Massachusetts, 1834, who once said, "I do not choose to be born in Lowell." And indeed, when he was 21 years old, he left for Paris and never returned to the United States. He had gone to West Point, where he was something of a rebel. He wore his hair longer than was allowed, and the superintendent, Robert E. Lee, at the time, eventually kicked him out. James Whistler, who believed in art for art's sake, unlike most Victorians, did not believe that art or artists had a responsibility to convey a moral message. And the painting known as Whistler's Mother, entitled Arrangement in Gray and Black Number 1, is a painting of his mother, because Whistler's model, who was scheduled to come, did not show up. It's the birthday of E.B. White, Elwin Brooks White, born in Mount Vernon, New York, 1899, a writer for the New Yorker magazine for nearly 60 years. In 1938, he and his wife, Catherine Angel, left New York City, moved to a farm on the coast of Maine, where he wrote essays, his columns for Harper's, collected in the book One Man's Meat. He wrote his famous essay, Death of a Pig, in which he wrote, "I discovered that once having given a pig an enema, there is no turning back, no chance of resuming one of life's more stereotyped roles. The pig's lot and mine were inextricably bound, as though the rubber tube were the silver cord." And a few years after that, he wrote his famous book, Charlotte's Web, about a pig who is saved by a little girl and a clever spider. In the summer of 1948, E.B. White, sitting in a hotel room at the Algonquin during a heat wave in the city, wrote his essay, Here is New York, in which he wrote, on any person who desires such queer prizes, New York will bestow the gift of loneliness and the gift of privacy. No one should come to New York to live unless he is willing to be lucky. And it's the birthday of Jhumpa Lahiri, born in London, 1967, settled in America in Rhode Island, where her father was a librarian. On weekends, the family would get together with other Bengali families to cook Bengali food and speak Bengali and reminisce. And her first book, The Interpreter of Maladies, was a collection of 9 stories about Bengalis living in suburban New England. The book came out as a trade paperback in 1999 and won the Pulitzer Prize. Here's a poem for today by Rosie King entitled Again. I'm on my knees among the crisp brown crunch, then stand in time to see 2 boys, slim teens in shorts, white t-shirts, faces glowing, talking quietly, bounce of a tennis ball fading as they pass, and I'm filled again with a crush of old sweetness at how giving a moment can be as it vanishes, the roughened gray branches of the pear, small knobby fingers flung out at every tip, fresh clutch of weeds at my chest. A poem by Rosie King, Again, from Time and Peonies, published by Hummingbird Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, brain training developed by scientists and game designers who turn cognitive research tasks into challenging games. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Magoosh, online test prep for the ACT, SAT, GMAT, GRE, LSAT, and MCAT. Prep smart, go far, and enjoy the ride at magoosh.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center, information at 789-6780.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm this afternoon's volunteer host, Lori Scandling, and I'm happy to welcome Hiram Henry and John Kern, who are with the Juno Trail and Roadrunners organization. And we're here to talk about the Midsummer's Night Run, which is tomorrow evening with a check-in registration at 5:15 at False Outer Point, and the 10K starts at 6 o'clock. So we were chatting. How do we know it's midsummer? How is that determined? And John, you said you actually did some research on this.
Well, at Midsummer Night, I think that's Shakespearean, right? And actually nationwide, there are Midsummer Night runs. It's a widely held practice. Typically in Juneau, it's one of the nicest evenings of the summer. So we're pumped. It's going to be a nice summer evening tomorrow.
Promise.
We can guarantee that it will be sunny somewhere.
Well, and let's be honest, it's actually kind of nice to run in weather that's a little bit cool. It sure beats long hauls or even short hauls in real hot weather, which takes it out of you. So tomorrow night might be just about right.
Well, and the course is strategically located at the north end of Douglas Island, so it's the lee of any southeast wind.
Thank you for planning that. Is it also chosen as an area because it's less trafficked and a safer area, or has this been a traditional running site for the Juneau area?
Over the years, there have been many running events that have taken place in North Douglas. It's further out, so there is less traffic, but it is on North Douglas Highway. We make efforts to notify traffic that there are runners on the road and have people run on a consistent side of the road. But it is along a road. It's also along the beach, which makes a beautiful view along the water, which is one of the draws, really, because it's just a gorgeous setting. You can see the glacier.
Definitely motivating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That visual stimulation and feedback. Now, is tomorrow night's race, it's not really a race, is it? It's or is it a race? I mean, people place and they will get times, but is it a race?
The Juneau Trail and Roadrunner events have a really broad spectrum. There will be people of all abilities, ages, and it's really open to anybody that wants to run.
Or walk,
that's correct. Okay. And so they'll be anywhere between pretty moderate paces to Juneau also has some pretty smoking fast runners. So there will be people that run at really high performance rates. And then also there's an even broader range of people that are just there because they like the camaraderie of a running event or walking. And we also have two distances in this event. Like most, there's a 1 mile option and then the 10K, which is 6.2 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So that opens it up to people that are interested in different distances as well.
And speaking of camaraderie, the name of the organization is now Juneau Trail and Roadrunners. John, why did the name change and what was it previously called?
Yeah, this was formerly the Southeast Roadrunners, which I'm sure a lot of people hated to see the name change. But we're getting more and more interest from people actually for our marathon around the nation, but locally as well. We get a lot of new people in town, a lot of visitors. So they come to town or they search on the internet and they want to know what's running locally and what can they participate in. And with Southeast Roadrunners, we always got that disconnect. Is that Juneau or where? And so now by clearly designating Juneau Trail Roadrunners, people with the internet and social media are more closely directed to what's going on in town. And we added the trail because pretty much half of our runs are on trails, and trail running is one of the fastest growing
super popular right now
sports in the country right now. Yes.
About how many folks are involved in the organization at this point?
Well, we have a board, a very dedicated board of seven, the membership. Well, my Facebook page gets like 600 hits. The email goes out to almost 600 addresses. I can't tell you what membership is right now. I think it usually runs official members 200 to 300 within the community. I always want to point out that it is actually the largest in single recreation program in the community by both the number of participants and actual participant hours, and it's all done by volunteers.
It's impressive. We're talking with John Kern and Hiram Henry about the Juneau Trail and Roadrunners Association. They are sponsoring a Midsummer's Night Run tomorrow. Meet at False Outer Point at 5:15, and the 10K or the 1 miler will start at 6 o'clock. Hiram, is there a charge for tomorrow's participation, and is it a fundraiser for anything?
This is not a specific fundraiser for any cause, but there is an entrance fee for children or under 18 is $1, for adults $10. And that's the kind of standard entrance fee that JTRR charges for most events. Some fundraisers charge a little bit more that are affiliated with JTRR. But $10 is the standard.
And you mentioned there are some other upcoming events. I heard the word marathon. When and where will that be held?
I'll let John talk specifically about the marathon, but I'll point out that I looked at the tally, and I think that there are approximately 35 running events through the Juneau Trail and Roadrunners in Juneau annually. And we're about halfway through the season, and there are 15 still yet to come. So we're still thick in the season, and John is a marathon buff, and it's one of our largest events, so I'll let him discuss that, which is coming up soon.
35 events. That's an average of one
every
10 days.
We have
that's
real
a lot of work for a volunteer
organization. calendar, which I set in December. So if anybody's interested in establishing a new race, they have to get to thinking about it. Busiest time is coming up right now. I mean, this is a midweek run. Then we have the Mount Roberts Tram Run and Perseverance Ben Blackcoat Memorial Run. But July 29th is the marathon and half marathon, and that'll be held on Douglas Island as well, starting at Sandy Beach. We already have 100 people signed up, 50 for the marathon, about half and half split, many of them from all over the country, three from other countries. We get a lot of participation from people elsewhere trying to get a marathon or a half marathon in Alaska. I happen to be one of the 50 staters seeking a marathon in every state. So Alaska is real popular, Juneau is real popular. Also, because of our climate, we have one of the few areas where you can run throughout the year. And so we have one of only two nationally recognized marathons in July. So it's a good time for people from elsewhere to come up and enjoy our wonderful climate for running.
So I just have to ask, how many more states do you have to go, John?
Actually, I've got 41 states. I've got 9 more left. So got them all planned out to finish by next year.
So you said 100 people already were registered. Is there any limit on the number of folks who can participate for safety reasons or management reasons in the marathon and half marathon on July 29?
Well, we haven't implemented any limits to date, and we've been able to handle the crowds. We get a lot of people signing up for the half marathon on the day of the half marathon, and we're okay with that. Our volunteers do a really great job. I have to point out that we're looking for volunteers now for manning water aid stations. We throw a great picnic after the marathon and half marathon. And
will that be at one of the shelters at Sandy Beach? Then?
It's a great community event, and certainly would invite anybody who is a runner, knows a runner, or just wants to get involved with people with great energy to volunteer. Give me an email if I can give out my...
Please do.
johnakern@gmail.com. That's johnakern. Give me an email, and we'd be happy to have you help out on the marathon. Also, the following weekend, we have the Ockman Sprint Triathlon. And the weekend after that, we have an ultra trail run put on by Keith Levy. So,
how long will that be? When you say ultra, I think of, 100 miles.
It's a 50K.
Okay.
Put together on
miles.
The various trails around Last Chance Basin, Salmon Creek. Great run, real popular. Again, growing an attraction for people from outside the state to come up and do an ultra in Juneau.
Well, thanks for joining us. We're talking with John Kern and Hiram Henry about the Juneau Trail and Roadrunners. If you'd like to know more, what is the website? You said people have been, typically Google Juneau Running. So what is the specific website? You have a heck of a calendar with 35 events a year. Where can folks look at that calendar?
Yeah, we're still working on changing the name on our website, so that is confusing. Of course, if you search Juneau Running, you'll probably find us, but it is Juneau Serr. That's juneauserr.wixsite.com. So we're using the old name yet. We haven't changed that yet, but yes, please come on. The calendar is updated. We have a Susan Cable is our volunteer working on our website, and it's kind of a work in progress, but she's doing a great job. It's a lot of good information.
And it sounds like you encourage pre-registration so that you know how many volunteers you need to handle the folks. Is that
definitely for the marathon and our larger events. But the nice thing about the event, like Hiram, is you can decide at 4:30, tomorrow afternoon, that you're going
to
come
out
and run, and he'll sign you up, and you'll get an official time. So a lot of our events are registration, same-day registration, and So it gives people a lot of freedom to just decide on a whim to come out and run, and we certainly invite them to do that.
And remember, you don't have to run, and you can do 1 mile tomorrow night, or you can do six, which is a 10K. So join the Midsummer's Night Run tomorrow evening out at False Otter Point at North Douglas. 5:15 is the registration. It's $1 if you're a kid and $10 if you're a grown-up. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Back in 1559, Duke August of Saxony ordered that the house sparrows of Dresden be excommunicated. The familiar birds were slipping into Holy Cross Church and interrupting the sermon with their exuberant chirping, and, as Duke August described it, their endless, unchaste behavior before the altar. It's nearly 500 years later, and they're still at it. That manic chirping can now be heard almost worldwide. Their cheeping and peeping rings from suburban rooftops, home improvement centers, and yes, even the inside of some churches. House sparrows are at their noisiest and their most endearing during the male's courtship display. As he struts and spins in front of his intended, the little brown Romeo puffs out his handsome black breast and droops his wings and cocks his tail to expose the silvery feathers of his rump. Other males soon join in, their chirping growing ever louder and faster as they face off. All the fuss and attention act as a super stimulus to the flattered female. Look for the sparrows' underappreciated dance in your neighborhood. It might just be enough to distract you from the sermon, too. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Before Alaska could build the oil pipeline, the question of who owned what land in the state went all the way to the White House.
The land was actually going to be gone forever. We were never going to get it back.
The story of Alaska Native land claims on Midnight Oil, the new series and podcast from Alaska's Energy Desk. Visit KTOO.org or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Stacia Harris from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. As part of 17YOK, all sorts of groups are adopting specific weeks during which they do something to help spread kindness. This week's group is the Glory Hole. You can sign up for a week by emailing 17YOK at junopolice.com. Together we can make Juno a better place to live.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling, this afternoon's volunteer host. Listening to that public service announcement about the Year of Kindness, or YOK, got me to chatting with our next guest, Marciano Duran, who is the president of Rotaract. If Rotaract had done something along the lines of the Week of Kindness, as some folks are coordinating as part of the Year of Kindness. But let's start first, Mars, with what is Rotaract?
Well, first of all, thank you, Lori, for having me in here. I really just appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak to you here. And Rotaract, what we do is we're a group of 18 to 30-year-olds who are dedicated to getting together and working on ways to improve our community and to do service projects for the community as part of a collaboration with Rotary International, a very, very good organization that I encourage you all to look into. And so what we do meet together to talk about what we can do to make ourselves good stewards of this wonderful town that we live in and to make it as special as it is, because that doesn't happen on its own, and it's something that a lot of people work together to do to make this town as special as it is.
How did you find out about Rotaract? And it would seem that 18 to 30-year-olds are pretty busy with their lives during that time in terms of education, families, jobs. So what introduced you to Rotaract, and how did you get involved?
Well, actually, I had been invited to Rotary initially before Rotaract had been revamped and resurrected here in Juneau. And it was in my involvement with Rotary through this high school friend who had invited me that they announced that it was going to be revamped, so I went to check it out, and it turned out to be a really great thing. A lot of people coming together with like-minded interests who and like-minded goals, young people who are driven and wanted to make a difference around here. So that's about where it started.
Talk about what we initially opened with here, and that is the Year of Kindness sponsored by the Juneau Police Department. How did Rotaract connect with that initiative this year?
Yeah, actually, we had a really fun collaboration this year. There was a fashion show that we had held at Elizabeth Bratovich Center a couple months ago in collaboration with Year of Kindness, and it was the Kindness in Couture fashion show. The benefits of that went actually towards a benefiting reach, and it was a really great event. We had local businesses come together and have models show off their fashion and some of the local options you have for clothing here in town. And it was a really great night. We had a very good turnout. A lot of people are constantly telling me how much fun they had, and we're just really excited and just very happy to have been part of such an event like this that benefited the community. And
The proceeds were donated to Reach.
That's correct, yes. It was a lot of fun, actually. Reach actually had recipients participate in the fashion show as well, and you could just tell how much fun they were having up there, and it was really a great night all the way around.
Now, I know Rotaract has another fundraiser being planned a couple weeks from now. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So our next big event is going to be the second annual Christmas in July fundraiser. Now, last year, we had it was our first event as a new club to hold this first annual Christmas in July event to benefit AWARE. And this year, we're also going to partner with AWARE again at the AWARE shelter to donate split the proceeds with them and to collaborate with them. They've been great partners in the past, and we're happy to work with them again. And this event is taking place July 29th from 8 to midnight at the Hangar Ballroom. And it's going to be a really good time. It was last year, absolutely. Christmas in July is a bit of a weird theme, but it's really great. I encourage you to come by and really get into it. We have an ugly sweater contest that takes place, so you bring out your ugliest Christmas sweater.
I saw some photos last year, and
yeah,
they were memorable, I'll just say that.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun. I actually got disqualified because they said my sweater was not ugly enough. But no, it was a lot of fun. And we're just really thankful for the community involvement even on these things. There's a lot of cooperation that goes into it, a lot of ties that we build with our community. The Hangar really came forward with us and helped us with worked with us on the rate because it's such a good cause. And Alaska Brewing Co. has been an invaluable ally as well. We're just really happy for this involvement from these local businesses that that really do take a interest in and improving things around here. So,
and how much are the tickets to Christmas in July, and where can they be found?
So, I believe the site name, you can go to JunoRotaract.org, or you can go to our Facebook, Juno Rotaract on Facebook, or on Instagram even, and you'll be able to find some links that'll take you to a site where you can buy tickets there. There will be some Rotaractors who are going around town and selling paper tickets as well. So if you can certainly get a hold of someone through any of those websites, and we can get a ticket to you that way.
And how much
and
are they?
The tickets are $20, mm-hmm. And I believe that we're actually including a beer with that. So it is a 21-plus event, I should say, mm-hmm. this one around. So
we should probably spell Rotaract. So if Juno,
yes.
Folks look for Juno Rotaract, it has a little bit of a spelling that might not be intuitive. So it's Rotaract, like Rotary.
Yep, that's correct.
So can you speak to how the name Rotary came about? Because Rotaract might sound like, I don't know, a car enthusiast club or something.
Oh.
What is the genesis of the Rotary name?
You know, I believe it has something to do. I should probably have a better answer here, but I believe it has something to do with this action that we take, actions that we take here to in our age group from the 18 to 30 year olds. And we're more young, and we have this energy to try and do these more, maybe physical or fun activities that we do. So it's, I mean, I guess it's a hard question.
Action-oriented to the community.
That's what I'm trying to say. Thank you, Lori.
Yeah. Well, I know Rotary itself came out of the initial practice in the early 1900s of business people rotating the meeting of that group amongst their offices, and it was a chance for professionals to come together and work to improve the community. What are some of the other regular types of, you mentioned community service. You do fundraisers and direct the proceeds towards organizations in our community. Are there some more standard types of community service that the club takes on?
Well, actually, it's still pretty dynamic. The club is still pretty young. And so a lot of this, the projects that we take on are from Rotaractors who are going about their daily lives and seeing needs that could be filled. And so, I mean, we've stepped in quite a few projects. Actually, we've helped out with the foster awareness program, and we've helped out with helping kids in over at the summer programs for kids and a couple things around town, I guess. So it's a pretty eclectic a very wide net that we cast here for the type of projects that we take on. In general, we've settled into maybe a structure of having three big events that we are going to be spearheading every year, and then just assisting in other projects that the community is taking on from there.
Is one of those three events the Rachel McLeod Dinner Box? I know that Rotaract had a role in that.
Yeah, we sure did. We had a couple people who were helping out with that as well, and that was a really great event as well, just to assist the community in that capacity. I'm not positive if that's something that we're going to be continuing to do going forward, but we are trying to shoot for those three big events per year.
What will be the third one? You've got Kindness and Couture, and then Christmas in July, which we're talking about today, and that's set for Saturday, July 29th, 8 to midnight at the Hangar Ballroom. Tickets are $20. Do you have an idea what the third project annually might be for the Rotaract group?
You know, not quite yet, actually. We're still in the brainstorming phase for that third one. As we're marching towards this Christmas in July event, most of our attention is directed towards that and making all the pieces come together. And so for now, we don't have a third project planned for the year, but we just know that we can handle it. We have the manpower. We have the will. We just need to find a worthy cause to apply that towards.
Sure. Can you give us an idea of how much was donated to AWARE from Christmas in July last year?
For our first annual Christmas in July event, I believe the proceeds that we had given towards AWARE was just over $1,000 the first time around.
And how about for REACH in your Kindness and Couture event?
In REACH, we had a little over $3,000.
So that's significant.
As we're, you know, kind of figuring out how to hold these events and where we can cut costs and where we can find new revenue, it's improving as we go along substantially. It's still a very young club, and with our members still learning how to do this and to manage a club like this, it's only getting better. And I'm very excited to see where we can go with this.
We're talking with Marciano Duran. He is the president of the Rotaract group here in Juneau. Rotaract is associated with Rotary International, and it is for young men and women who are 18 to 30 years old who are interested in community service and other projects within their community. We are talking about the Christmas in July. That's in, what, a couple weeks? And where might someone look for information then? You mentioned Juneau Rotaract, that's rotaract.org, and you mentioned Facebook and Instagram?
Yes, those are probably the easiest way to get to know more about our organization and to get a hold of someone. If you're interested or if you know someone 18 to 30 years old who is looking for a good outlet or a way to give back to the community, this is a great opportunity for them to do so.
And what are the requirements of the club? I know typical Rotary clubs meet weekly and there's an annual dues. How is Rotaract structured here in Juneau?
So our dues structure is we try to keep it more affordable because we are young professionals who are still trying to establish ourselves. And so we're not trying to break all of our members' banks right on the onset, you know. But, yeah, it's an annual fees that I believe are $50 annually right now. And our typical meeting schedule is the first and third Tuesday of every month at 6 p.m. with a rotating, I guess back to the Rotary.
Back to Rotary.
Yeah, a rotating venue. Typically it's at the L.G. Rayfield Mertz Conference Room. That's kind of our home base. But once a month we try to reach out to a business leader in the community to host the club and to teach us or talk to us a little bit about their story and how they built a business in Juneau, and to give us help us build those ties to our community and to meet those people, those impactful community members as well.
And Marth, what's your line of work? You mentioned young professionals. What do you do for a living?
Personally, I sell real estate at Coldwell Banker Race Realty, and so that's my gig.
And do folks come across the spectrum from all kinds of types of jobs?
Absolutely. It's a very, very wide, very diverse crew we have, and it's exactly how we like it. Definitely have a very good snapshot of the young professional community around here. Not even all professionals. I mean, everyone's just, some people are still figuring their stuff out. If you're in at the university and just looking for some extra fun stuff to do before you graduate or even afterwards, you know, it's a very welcoming set of people that we have, very friendly people, and I couldn't be prouder to be a part of it.
Thanks, Mars. We appreciate it. Christmas in July is Saturday, July 29th. It is for 21 and over. Tickets are $20. You can find them at Juneau Rotor Act. org. Thanks for joining us today. Looking ahead to tomorrow on Wednesday, July 12th on Juneau Afternoon, we'll be learning about a bowling fundraiser and how to prevent infections. We'll have an update from Southeast Alaska Land Trust, and I can't wait, Ukulele Russ, so we might have some live music in the studio. That will be fun. Let's take a look at weather throughout the rest of this week. It is predicted that there will be scattered showers with daily highs in the high 50s. The chance of precipitation changes a little bit every day, but runs typically between 40 and 50% with that precipitation predicted for certain times of the day. For example, tonight, showers likely mainly before 7, cloudy with a low around 48. Looking at tomorrow, showers likely again, mainly between 1 and 4 p.m. Chance of precipitation is 60%. And tomorrow night, precipitation remains at that 60% chance with showers probably between 10 p.m. and 1. So more of the same coming doesn't mean rain all day, but it does mean rain pretty much every day. Thanks for joining me. I'm Lori Scandling, today's host, and thanks to Jeff Brown, our producer.